Good morning, MGTOW men. What a lovely day. I'm going to take you on an adventure on how to build good quality battery chargers for like things like car batteries and whatnot, you know? Okay. Now, here we have the title and an image behind it. Now, what's this image? Well, this is the front of the battery charger. This is a specialised gauge that goes between 10 to 16 volt. It's for monitoring the voltages in a 12 volt battery system. Now, lead acid batteries have, I think, a 12.8 to 13.2 volt charge, but I'm using a calcium silver lead acid battery, which has about a 15 to 15 and a half volt charge. Okay, so that's that there. And what we're looking at here is looking at the voltmeter, an analog voltmeter. These are a little hard to get hold of. They're about $25, $27 Australian, compared to a standard voltmeter, which has a range from 0 to 20 volt. You know, they're about $8 each. Here's a big giant capacitor that's rated to 24 volt, you know. Now, when we go from the front view, we go to the plan view, right? So I'm going to explain how this all works. There is the lead that carries the 240 volt through a sort of a boltus, a thing to sort of bolt it to the mechanism or screw it to the mechanism. And then that goes around there. That's like strain release. Nothing gets jerked off or anything. It goes around to a second one, and then this input voltage, input line, gets split up into its two input wires, you know. And that's, I'd rather have a better heat shrink, a thicker one with a glue line. But under the circumstances, there's been dual sort of coating and necessary spacing and that, you know. And I suppose as long as you don't stick a fucking knife in it, you won't get electrocuted, you know. So it's okay. The transformer has been mounted onto an aluminium plate with using a silicon sealant type glue, and then you get the transformer, coat it, the base, with a little bit of silicon sealant, and you press it onto the aluminium, and then you just sort of wiggle the part, just a little bit of wiggling, you wiggle the parts together, and then that gives you basically a sort of rice paper thin glued joint of silicon sealant. I forget the name. It's not fluorohexane, silices or some fucking thing, whatever. And that surface was cleaned with acetone, cleaned with detergent, cleaned with acetone, and then scrubbed clean with dry, fresh, wet and dry abrasive paper to give a good joint for the glue to bond onto, you know, the sealant to bond onto. And from there we get the two leads. It's 12 volt RMS, which stands for the average amount of power in terms of the amount of electrons and the pressure that they're running under or running at, which is different to, which is how you measure alternating current. And so it's a 12 volt transformer. There it says 12 volt, 1 amp. Or 1.67 amp, which is 20 volt, or 20 watts, sorry, or thereabouts. And the output leads in alternating current 12 volt. They go to this circuit board. Now, this is what is called a bridge rectifier. There's four diodes, and when the power goes in that direction, it goes into this diode, and then that diode goes out to the When the power goes in, I didn't fuck that up, did I? No. I'm really tired. When the power goes, it alternates, it changes direction. And these four diodes are in a configuration with the copper tracks underneath. And so when the power goes that way, then... Ah, fuck. Where is it? Well, anyway, this side of the fucking... These electrodes become rich in power, which is a surplus of electrons, you know. And because electrons have a negative charge, and this side of the fucking copper tracks have a deficiency of electrons. So the power... comes out of here via that thing, via that cable, and then that goes off to one battery clamp, which is black, and the power returns to the circuit via this lead, and then that goes back into the, you know, so that's a rectified DC. Now what I've done is I've put in, you follow these leads, that is a giant, that go, they go out to an electrolytic capacitor. It's a big one, it's 22,000 microfarads or picofarads, microfarads probably. It's not a huge amount, but it's a huge amount for this circuit. It's really good, it levels it off almost basically pure DC, no ripple. And then the negative side of this goes to the voltmeter, and the positive side goes around to there to this thing. So the good thing about this, you might go, oh, that's not, that looks like a real fucking mess. It's not until you actually examine it that you can actually see what's going on. And you say, why did I build it? Because I don't often use them, but they're handy. And they're sort of necessary for topping up batteries. And 20 watts isn't a huge amount of power. You know, the last one I built, I designed it this way, right? Similar to this, but I think its output was about either 3 or 7 watts. That means you could put it on, you could hook it up to a battery and come back in 2 or 3 weeks. You know. Didn't matter if you sort of forgot about it for fucking 2 or 3 weeks, you know. But it was for just keeping batteries charged rather than fast charging with huge amounts of power and that. So I don't often use them, and, you know, and what's in them. These are about the voltmeter, these voltmeters, these very, very, very fucking good voltmeters, are about $28 Australian. The diodes are about, I don't know, 50 cents each, I guess. The big capacitor is probably about, I don't know, it depends on who you get them from, what their rated service life is in hours. You know, some might be, you know, 5,000 hours, and they're used for things that are just hardly ever used, and some are for things that are meant for the last 20 fucking years, and they have a price like an arm and a leg on them, you know. The transformers are about, well, it depends on where you get them, right? See, these lights, I went to the op shop, you know, the opportunity or charity or community recycling shop, and I found two of these for $5 each. So they're a bit fucked in. The stems up there were a bit rusty, you know. But the transformers inside were good. And I got those for about $5 a piece. Whereas to buy the Transformers in Australia via JCAR, you know, buying ones or twos from a retail store, not in bulk by the palletful, you know, from China or whatever. But I got them for $5 a piece. So there's the Transformer out of one of those lights, right? So all up, that's a really, really, really good battery charger. As technically, it's fucking brilliant, you know. But these cunts here, they want about $150. That's a 4-amp. It's a 4-amp battery charger. That means it's 48 watts. That cunts want $150 Australian on them. That's about the sort of going price, right? My one is 20 watts and about, we'll say $35 Australian in parts, you know. And mine's much, technically mine is much better than theirs. And this is what they used to come like, these tiny little, I think it's compact 4500, and I think that might be 45 watts. And I had 6 volt or 12 volt or something, or 12 volt and 24, something like that. But these are long gone, these basic designs, basic little transformer type are long gone. But guess where I learnt how to do these? From burning out, blowing up these, you know. But, you know, so anyway. And this, when it's running, that barely even gets warm. You know, if it's 10 degrees ambient temperature, this might get up to, say, 11 or 12 degrees, you know what I mean? That's how we go. So there, gentlemen, is this thing running. It's hooked up and it's running. So I'm going to wait till it gets up to about 6. As the voltage multiplies and the surface charge in the battery increases, when it gets to about 16 volts, I'll call the battery charged, you know. But, yeah. So I'm now, because that is, there's two ways to read electricity. The voltage is the pressure. Think of it like a garden tap or something, you know. If there's not much pressure, the water's going to drip out. It might be a thin stream, it might be a thick stream, but it'll run out at a very low pressure. That's the in alternating current, that's the time it's moving forward, you know. So this is one cycle here. They call it Hertz, after someone or other Hertz, you know. So you get 50 or 60 reversals, cycles like that per second, right? And alternating current, because it goes this direction and then it goes that direction, just reverses direction up and down the wire, you know. But that is measured in root mean square. That means if you got all the space under there and squeezed it out to the sides, and you know, that's a zero point along the line there where it stops and changes direction, you know, reverses flow. What they do is they call it root mean square, or RMS, and that's the that's where they measure the voltage. If that was made into nice thick little fucking rectangles of power, that's what the peak voltage would be, you know. But this is different to the actual peak volt, true peak voltage. And true peak voltage is multimeters and other instruments test for RMS on alternating current, Whereas on DC, they're testing the true peak voltage. Rectified and filtered AC, or rectified and filtered DC, is basically nearly a flat line across the top there, and that's where your peak voltage lies. And that's why, peak voltage on DC is 1.41 times the RMS voltage on alternating current. So that's why I can pull, like, say, 17, 18 volts out of a fucking 12 volt transformer, and which works well on a calcium silver lead acid battery, and because I've presented, this is how to build them. These work really well. You've got to be careful that AC 240 volt can be lethal, and there is other hazards like sparks and bits and pieces, and not really, but you just got to be mindful. Like, for instance, down this lead somewhere is a scrape mark on, it's only about, say, 5 millimeters of exposed wire, but I didn't see it when I was building it, and I didn't see it when I was handling it and fitting it in the dark. But what happened was, it was only in the sunshine the next day that I saw the little bit of bare exposed wire on the active fucking wire that's brown, And I thought, I looked at that, and I thought about all the sort of the necessities of repairing it and all this sort of stuff, and I thought, well, for the time being, a strong wrapping of electrical tape, unplug it, clean the wire, and give it a good wrap of insulation tape, 3 or 4 layers of that, and it'll be right. And to complete this, I'm going to add on a proper electrical, like the rectification circuit type information. I'm going to add on a proper video on the subject, so that you can really get to know it. And because it takes a lot of time to make videos, and I can't see the point in repeating it, in just duplicating what lots and lots and lots of other people have done. And this person has done it, he's done a good job of it, it's competent, it's worth listening to. And this is how, on the path to actually making your own stuff, or repairing your own stuff. Because, like, I'm not paying $150 to buy a basic shitbox charger that has all my stuff's better, for sure. But their stuff, they're not worth $150. What they're asking for in the shops and shit. They're not worth $150. At best, they should be about $40, $45, And, so anyway, part one and part two. Part two is now commencing.
This is a full wave bridge rectifier. It's used to power electronic circuits, so we're going to learn in detail how they work in this video. Electricity is dangerous and can be fatal. You must be qualified and competent to carry out any electrical work. Full bridge rectifiers look like this. There are many shapes and sizes, but they essentially consist of four diodes in a certain arrangement. They are usually aligned in a diamond configuration, but they can be aligned in other ways, such as these. We typically find them represented on engineering drawings like this, this being the symbol for a diode. The arrow points in the direction of conventional current. This shows that AC electricity is the input and DC electricity is the output. The full bridge rectifier converts AC alternating current into DC direct current. Why is that important? Because the power outlets in our homes provide AC, but our electrical devices use DC, so we need to convert the AC into DC electricity. For example, a laptop charger takes AC from the power outlet and converts this to DC to power the laptop. If you look at the power adapter for your laptop and other electronic devices, the manufacturer's label tells you it's converting AC to DC. In this example, it states that it needs an input of between 100 and 240 volts with the symbol for AC electricity, and this will draw 1.5 amps of current. It will then output 19.5 volts of DC electricity and 3.33 amps of current. Notice that it also states 50 to 60 Hz. This is the AC frequency, and we'll look at that in just a moment. In AC electricity, the voltage and current constantly change direction between forwards and backwards. That's because there's a magnetic field in the AC generator, which essentially pushes and pulls electrons in the wires. This is therefore changing between positive and negative values as it flows forwards and backwards. The voltage is not constant, even though the multimeter will make it look like it is. If we plotted this, we get a sine wave pattern. The voltage changes between a peak positive and a peak negative value as the maximum intensity of the magnetic field passes the coils of wire inside the AC generator. This example reaches 170 volts at its peaks. So if we plotted these values, we have positive and negative peaks of 170 volts. If we took the average of these values, we would get 0 volts. That's not very useful, so a clever engineer decided to use the root mean squared voltage. That is what our multimeters calculate when we connect them to the electrical outlets. To find the peak voltage, we multiply the root mean squared voltage by the square root of 2, which is roughly 1.41. To find the RMS voltage, we divide the peak voltage by 0.707. For example, here I have a North American, British, Australian, and European power outlets. This multimeter shows basic waveforms, and when I connect to any of these between the phase and neutral, we see a sine wave, which is indicating this is AC electricity. Notice that the British and European outlets are 230 volts. The Australian outlet is 240 volts, but all three of these are at a frequency of 50 Hz. However, the North American outlets read 120 volts at a frequency of 60 Hz. The frequency is measured in Hz, but this just means the sine wave is repeating 60 times per second in the North American electrical systems, and 50 times per second in the rest of the world. The voltage is lower in the North American system at 120 volts, whereas it's 230 to 240 volts in the rest of the world, although there are some exceptions, but we won't go into that in this video. The peak voltage of each electrical system is therefore as follows. In DC electricity, the voltage is constant and in the positive region. The electrons do not reverse, they all flow in just one direction. So, if I measure this battery, we see a flat line in the positive region at around 1.5 volts. So this is DC electricity. This solar panel also produces DC. We can see it produces a flat line at around 4 volts on the multimeter. We can use this adapter to measure a USB port. We can see it's providing around 5 volts DC. And if we plot this with the other multimeter, we again see a constant flat line indicating this is DC electricity. This is a four-wave bridge rectifier. On these input terminals, we see around 12 volts AC with a sine wave. And on these output terminals, we see around 14 volts of DC. So this device is converting AC to DC. The voltage is slightly higher on the output because of the capacitor, and we'll see why that is later on in this video. Now, you need to remember that rectifiers will only convert AC to DC. It cannot convert DC into AC. For that, we would need an inverter, which uses special electronic components to achieve that, but we won't cover that in this video. By the way, we have covered how power inverters work in detail in our previous video. Links can be found in the video description down below for that. The rectifier consists of diodes. A diode is a semiconductor device which allows current to flow through it, but in only one direction. So if we connect this lamp to a DC power supply, it will illuminate. We can reverse the leads and it will still illuminate. If I place a diode on the red wire and connect this to the positive, it will again illuminate. But now, when I reverse the leads, the diode blocks the current and the lamp remains off. So it only allows current to flow in one direction, and we can therefore use this to control the direction of current in a circuit to form DC electricity. Let's see some different ways of how that's achieved. If we looked at an AC supply with a step-down transformer, which simply reduces the voltage to a safer level, the electrons are flowing forwards and backwards. So the load experiences an AC sine wave. The load could be anything from a resistor, a lamp, a motor, etc. If we inserted a diode, the diode will only allow current to flow in one direction. So the load now experiences a pulsating waveform. The negative half of the sine wave is currently being blocked. We can reverse the diode to block the positive half and only allow the negative half. This is therefore a half-wave rectifier. The output is technically DC, because the electrons only flow in one direction. It's just not a very good DC output, as it's not completely flat. Here I have a resistor, which is connected to a low-voltage AC supply. We see on the oscilloscope the AC sine wave. When I connect a diode in series with this, the oscilloscope shows a pulsating pattern in the positive region. If I reverse the diode, the oscilloscope shows a pulsating pattern in the negative region. If I connect two lamps in parallel, one with a diode, we see that the one without the diode is brighter because it's using the full waveform. The other lamp is dimmer because it's only using half of this waveform. The diode is blocking the other half. If we view this in slow motion, we can see that the diode-connected lamp is flickering more because of the gaps in power. Therefore, we can use this for simple circuits such as lighting or perhaps charging some simple batteries, but we can't use this for electronics as the components need constant power, otherwise they will not work correctly. We can add a capacitor in parallel with the load to improve the output. We'll look at that later on in this video. A better improvement is to use a four-wave rectifier, and there are two main ways to do that. We can create a four-wave rectifier simply by using a center tap transformer and two diodes. A center tap transformer just has another wire on the secondary side, which is connected to the center of the transformer coil. This allows us to use the full length of the transformer coil, or just half of it. because the current constantly reverses in AC electricity, while in the positive or forward half, the current flows through diode 1 and into the load, and then back to the transformer via the center tapped wire. Diode 2 is blocking the current, so it can't return through here. Only half the transformer coil is therefore being used. In the reverse or negative half, the current flows through diode 2, through the load, and then back to the transformer. Diode 1 is blocking the current. The current flows in one direction through the load. In either case, the current flows in just one direction through the load, so it is considered DC. But it is not smooth, it is still pulsating, there are just no gaps. The negative half has been converted into a positive half. The waveform is not smooth, so we need to apply some filtering, such as a capacitor. Again, we'll look in detail at that later on in this video. The most common method used is the full wave bridge rectifier. This uses four diodes. The AC supply is connected between diodes 1 and 2, with the neutral between 3 and 4. The DC positive output is connected between diodes 2 and 3, and the negative between diodes 1 and 4. In the positive half of the sine wave, the current flows through diode 2, through the load, through diode 4, and then back to the transformer. In the negative half, the current flows through diode 3, through the load, through diode 1, and then back to the transformer. So the transformer is supplying an AC sine wave, but the load is experiencing a rippled DC waveform because the current flows in just one direction. In this example circuit, we can see that rectified waveform on the oscilloscope, but this is not a flat DC output, so we need to improve this by adding some filtering. Using a rectifier will result in a ripple in the waveform. To smooth this out, we need to add some filters. The basic method is to simply add an electrolytic capacitor in parallel to the load. The capacitor charges during the increase in voltage and stores the electrons. It then releases these during the decrease. This therefore reduces the ripple. The oscilloscope will show the peaks of each pulse, but now the voltage doesn't decrease to zero. It slowly declines until the pulse charges the capacitor again. We can further reduce this by using a larger capacitor or by using multiple capacitors. In this simple example, you can see the LED turns off as soon as the power is interrupted. But if I placed a capacitor in parallel with the LED, it remains on because now the capacitor is discharging and powering the LED during the interruptions. In this circuit, I have a lamp connected as the load. The oscilloscope shows the rippled waveform. When I add a small 10 microfarad capacitor, we see that it makes very little difference to the waveform. When I use a 100 microfarad capacitor, we see the dip is no longer down to 0 volts. At 1000 microfarads, the ripple is very small. At 2200 microfarads, it's nearly completely smooth. This would be fine to use for many electronic circuits. We could use multiple capacitors also. Here we have a 470 microfarad capacitor, which has made some difference. But if I use two capacitors in parallel, we see the waveform is much more improved. When using a capacitor, we need to place a bleeder resistor across the output. This is a high-value resistor, which will drain the capacitor when the circuit is off to keep us safe. Notice with this circuit that when I switch it on, the capacitor charges quickly to over 15 volts. But when I switch it off, the DC output is still at 15 volts because there is no load, so the energy is still stored in the capacitor. This could be very dangerous if the voltage is high. In this example, I place a 4.7 kiloohm resistor across the output. We see the capacitor charges up to 15 volts, and when I switch it off, the capacitor quickly discharges. The electrons are flowing through the resistor, which discharges the capacitor. We can also see that without a capacitor, the output voltage is lower than the input voltage because of the voltage drop of the diodes. Here we have a simple full-wave bridge rectifier. On the input, we see there is 12 volts AC. On the output, we have 10.5 volts of DC. The voltage on the output is lower because of the diodes. Each diode has a voltage drop of around 0.7 volts. If we look at this circuit with a diode and an LED, we can measure across the diode to see a voltage drop of around 0.7 volts. The current in our full bridge rectifier must pass through two diodes on the positive half and two diodes on the negative half. So the voltage drop combines and is around 1.4 to 1.5 volts. So that is why the output will be reduced. However, if we were to connect a capacitor across the output, we will see that the output voltage is now higher than the input voltage. How is that possible? That's because the AC input is measuring the RMS voltage, or the root mean squared. This is not the peak voltage. The peak voltage is 1.41 times higher than the RMS voltage. The capacitors are charged up to the peak voltage and then release. There will be a small voltage drop because of the diodes, so the output is less than the peak input, but it will still be higher than the RMS input. For example, if we had 12 volts RMS on the input, the peak voltage would be 12 volts multiplied by 1.41, which is 16.9 volts. There will be a 0.7 volt drop here and here, so 16.9 volts subtract 1.4 is 15.5 volts. The capacitors are charged up to this voltage. This is only the approximate answer though. The amount of ripple and the actual voltage drop of the diodes will cause it to be slightly different in reality. But we can see that the output is higher than the input. Another common filter is placing two capacitors in parallel with a series inductor between these. This is used for circuits with larger loads. The first capacitor smooths the ripple. The inductor opposes the change in current and tries to keep it constant. And the second capacitor, which is much smaller, will then smooth out the final remaining ripple. Additionally, we can also connect a voltage regulator to the output. This is very common and allows some variation to the input, but it will provide a constant output voltage. This again has capacitors on either side of the regulator to ensure a smooth DC output. Here we can see a real version, which is connected to a 12 volt AC supply, and we see it has an output of around 5 volts DC. You can learn how to build your own voltage regulator in our previous tutorials. Links for this in the video description down below. Check out one of the videos on screen now to continue learning about electrical and electronics engineering, as this is the end of this video. You can follow us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, LinkedIn, and of course, theengineeringmindset.com.